My name's Gail Thackery. For those of you who don't know, it doesn't count if you're trying to spot a Fed. It doesn't count if you spot us because we're both wearing law enforcement insignia. You don't get a T-shirt for recognizing us. He wore his undercover outfit today. I'm Gail Thackery. I'm with the Arizona Attorney General's Office, and this is Kevin Higgins, who is with the Nevada Attorney General's Office. Kevin is going to lead off. Kevin is going to lead off by giving you some very useful information since you're attending this conference. Nevada has some very interesting laws that you should know about, and he's going to give you some survival skills for getting through the weekend unbusted. Kevin Higgins.
I'm not sure the Attorney General knows that's the reason I'm here today, but just as by way of background, I've been in the AG's office 14 years now. I've been doing the high-tech stuff for a couple of years. Before that, I was in charge of death penalty prosecutions. So I used to get people executed. Now I do other things, and it's a little change of pace. You have to understand here in Nevada, you're in the Old West, and most things weren't against the law. A lot of things aren't against the law. Things become against the law because somebody gets angry or mad or you do the wrong thing, and we'll talk about that briefly. I should also give a disclaimer. Any views I represent today are not necessarily the views of the Nevada Attorney General, the Nevada Department of Justice, or anybody else besides myself. For a long time, about the only things that were really you got in trouble for in Nevada, cheating at gambling is a bad thing, and it's still a bad thing. So I wouldn't recommend that this weekend. Stealing cows is a really bad thing. And up in northern Nevada, there aren't a lot of repeat offenders. They find their horses and their trucks, but not much else. Scaring the tourist is also discouraged. And so we try and avoid that. Okay, I'm talking as loud as I can. I'll try and talk louder. There's no big volume knob up here to turn up. I'm sorry. If there was a big knob, I would do that. Nevada Attorney General's office kind of got thrust into the high-tech issue when we discovered an employee of an unnamed state agency was using his technical expertise to, gasp, cheat at gaming. It's a bad thing. He had gone, and he was an employee of the Nevada Gaming Control Board. Any Nevada Gaming Control Board employees here today? All right, you could out them if they were here. He figured out how to reprogram the EEPROMs in slot machines. And not that you heard it here, but if you go into a casino and you look at all those slot machines, you're looking at a really big network. They know which machines are paying off, which machines are busted. Nobody plays nifty nickels anymore, so we're getting rid of it. And to make sure that all those machines, you know, back in the old days, there were actual mechanical reels, and the reel spinning determined little mechanical random number generator. The pins would go into the reels, bing, 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 you won or you're lost. Well, there's even the ones that look like they have reels today really don't have reels. There's a random number generator built in, a little EEPROM chip. And one thing that I'm probably telling people way too much. One thing Gaming Control Board does is they check, here he already knows about it over there. They check to make sure that that's an authorized random number generator program. Well, Mr. Harris figured out a way. There's a little slack on the EEPROM. He figured out a way to put his own little program in there. He had a coin drop sequence, and if he dropped the coins in the right sequence, 2, 3, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, it maxed out the jackpot. And so he was maxing out jackpots, and his friends were maxing out jackpots all over Nevada. The reason he got caught is he got greedy. And, you know, from a law enforcement point of view, that's how most people get caught. They get greedy. They brag. They tell people they think they're friends that aren't their friends, and they get caught. He went to Atlantic City. He knew there was a way to scam a Keno game in Atlantic City. He found out it really wasn't a random number generator, that it was a predictable cycle on the Keno machine. So he sat in the hotel room, had his laptop running, saw the sequence come up, went down, made his bet, won $100,000. And Mr. Harris got caught because he wanted it in cash. Casinos don't pay out cash for $100,000. So if any of you have got the Keno machine rigged, they don't pay out cash. You get a check. They get ID. They get your picture. He was so insistent, hotel security eventually goes into his hotel room, and to their surprise, the Keno numbers are coming up on his laptop before they're coming up on the Keno system. So Mr. Harris got caught and got arrested. The Gaming Control Board was somewhat chagrined and embarrassed. He was the head of technical services that was supposed to stop this sort of thing. We did a search warrant, we got his computer, and that's where our problem started. Local Metro, first thing they found was this disk that said cheating program on it. Hey! So they whip it into their computer back at and it just burns the hell out of it. I mean, it fries the hard drive. Number one, if you're in law enforcement, do not run the program that says cheating program. The second thing they found, they got his hard drive. We couldn't get into his hard drive. Anybody from the FBI here? We sent it to Quantico. They couldn't get into the hard drive. One of our guys had gone to a law enforcement training thing. We got into the hard drive, found out his whole scam, convicted him. He snitched off all his friends, and they've been prosecuted too. And so we kind of got into the high-tech prosecution thing through the back door. I think Mr. Harris, for the most part, is going to be an exception to the norm. Where local law enforcement is going to run into computers and computer crime, and we do it all the time here, we find guys that are making meth, that got their accounts receivable and accounts payable on their laptop. They're running a spreadsheet. You know, Joe has sold 10 grams, he owes me this much. Joe sold 5 grams, he hasn't paid me. You know, I owe this much money. And we find this, it used to be kept on little slips of paper. You know, they'd lose them. It was hard to do your year-end report, you know. So we get these guys, they've got the recipes, they've downloaded off the internet, either to make good meth or bad meth, if they know what they're doing. You know the difference between good meth and bad meth. Thank you. That's good to know. They catch them all the time. And it's much more efficient for us because they have the list of all their customers there. Most of the meth guys aren't smart enough to use code names. You know, Stinky owes me. It's, you know, Kevin Higgins owes me. So the other place we run into it is people killing their relatives. They oftentimes will have a little diary somewhere that says, my wife really needs to be killed. I got to kill my wife. They think they have it hidden in the Slack somewhere. There are two or three law enforcement types in Nevada that are smart enough to look at the Slack on the hard drive and find that stuff out. We had a dead apartment manager in Reno, one right between the eyes, over his desk. They go in, the screensaver's on. They get through the password on the screensaver, and lo and behold, guess whose account is up there? You know, Joe Smith's account, 3 months in the red. They go and find Joe, and of course he's the guy that off the apartment manager. So, you know, it's kind of low tech, and the way we look at it, there's a lot of people that are doing old crimes using computers. They're, keeping their meth records. They're writing, buy noose, get poison. They have their shopping lists on the computer. You find them. They got their financial records. And you find some new kind of crimes going on. We've had a couple of the short bus guys that have, you know, lured teenage girls to Nevada with vague promises. I'm sure nobody has made vague promises in chat rooms here to meet somebody of the opposite sex, right? I'm glad to know that. And like I said, you know, things are pretty open in Nevada until, frankly, you piss somebody off, okay? And last bill, we just passed a new bill in the legislature on high-tech crime. And I can tell you where about half the stuff came from. It is now a crime in Nevada to strip the header information off your email. We catch you doing it. It's a misdemeanor. Yay! That's got to be a Fed back there. And the reason is that an African-American state legislator was getting racist hate mail that the header was stripped off of. Nobody knows who sent it to him. So he introduces a bill, and it is now a crime to strip the header information. So somebody made him mad. Forfeiture. We can now, if we arrest you for any computer-related crime, we can forfeit any piece of equipment you've got and keep it. And the reason that happened is they caught a guy in Reno that was hacking cable boxes. He had like 300 cable boxes he'd hacked, so it got, you know, the Playboy Channel and all that stuff. And they convicted him of his misdemeanor crime. And then as he walks out the door, he says, I want my boxes back. And the prosecutor kind of starts sputtering and realizes that the forfeiture statute doesn't include cable boxes or electronic components. So the guy got his misdemeanor. He got 300 boxes back, though. So TCI wasn't happy, and they got their little bit put in the bill. Theft of computer services is illegal. Encryption in order to commit a crime is illegal. So if we catch you committing a crime, and you've been doing kiddie porn stuff, and you've encrypted it, and we're eventually able to get through it, you've actually committed a separate crime by encrypting it. Most of these guys are not the Kevin Polsons of the world that we catch. Their password is on a sticky note on their right on the monitor, or it's, you know, fluffy or whatever. And like I was talking to Gail about, one of the things I do is I teach kind of intro to prison 101 at the juvenile center up in Reno. And, you know, this is what life is like to be in prison, guys. Maybe you gotta straighten up your life. And this kid in the back goes, "Hey, man, you never catch the smart ones." And, well, you know, Junior, you're right here in custody. So we probably don't catch the really, really smart ones in state law enforcement. But we catch the dumb ones. And, the short bus guys we catch all the time. So I'll let Gail do her bit. I'm happy to answer questions. You can ask the prosecutor a question, and I reserve the right to decline to answer it. So thank you for your time. It's been interesting here. And I think I'm the only one with a tie on today. So. Yeah.
We are not feds. We are state agency, but we are government, and we are here to help you. True. Now look, you just found out something you didn't know about Nevada law. I'm going to tell you just a few minutes worth of things. I have read some of the most astoundingly bad legal advice I have ever seen in my life off the net. Get a real lawyer, will you? Let me explain a little bit about the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, because I'll bet that a lot of you, I see a lot of the confusion in the discussion forums out there, a lot of you do not realize that this is a very unusual statute. You've heard about the Fourth and Fifth Amendments and how if police do things wrong, maybe stuff will get suppressed and it can't be used against you. Well, the wiretap statutes, starting with the Federal Electronic Communications Privacy Act, are unique. There is a suppression rule that applies not just to the police, but to private citizens. And it has very sharp pointy teeth that you need to know about just to get through life with a computer, a video camera, for example. And we'll go to that in a minute. Now I want to do a little question of my own here. How many of you, from either reading or just, you know, what you see in the press or just your natural instincts, how many of you think that it's really shocking that Kevin Mitnick has been held this long without a trial? Until his guilty plea, of course. Okay? Now, of those who put their hands up, how many of you have asked Kevin Mitnick how many times he consented to delay his trial? You see, there's something that none of the pro-Mitnick folks are mentioning out there in all these hacked web pages and Free Kevin stuff. What they're forgetting to mention is that when a person is arrested in state court, in federal court, they are facing charges and they have a right to a speedy trial. Now, the number of days may be different in each state, but Kevin could not have been held this long if he had not asked for those delays. See, the rule is, if the defendant wants a speedy trial, the prosecution and the courts have got to work together to give it to him. And there are some exceptions to that. You know, somebody getting sick, like the defense attorney, a star witness might delay part of the trial. There are lots of reasons why there might be a delay. But the point is, the defendant, by and large, controls when he goes to trial. So ask Kevin how many times he's shown up in court or his attorney on his behalf and consented to the delay. Secondly, Kevin was held without bond. How many people think that was unfair? Come on, you guys have been saying different stuff out there on the net. A lot of people are complaining that it's outrageous that Kevin Mitnick was not allowed release before his trial. Well, you know what? He was on release when he skipped. Duh. Nothing that happens to you in your trial is going to be as bad as skipping and then getting caught and coming back to face new charges and the old charges. Judges don't look kindly on people who skip bond, so don't do it if you don't want to get held without bond. Now, one of my personal favorites, besides the fractured legal advice I get off the net, is hacker handles, or whatever you call those names you all give yourselves. We all give ourselves. I have one, too. And no, I won't tell you what it is. But when you are arrested, what effect do you think it has on the jury if the testimony from your friends, relations, your own records, maybe your own webpage, is that your name is the Angel of Destruction? Good. How about something thief? This is good. People use the most amazing handles, and they probably think they're very powerful at the time, but we get a lot of amusement out of them when we're doing our search warrants. Well, now let's go on to the most important thing we can talk about today, the ECPA. Basically, the wiretap statutes, and there are some variations by state, but let's talk about the federal one because you need to understand it at the FIMBL level that we're doing all our legal advice on today, because it applies to all of us. It is the minimum threshold by the federal statute. It is the minimum threshold of protection that we are all entitled to as we go around using phones, using computers, and talking to each other, communicating. The federal statute says the states can give more protection, but they can't give less. So here are the basic protections. We are having an oral conversation if we're talking in this room face-to-face. We're having a wire conversation if the human voice is being transmitted over a wire, microwave. We don't care what the form is. Now, this is a kind of technically inaccurate convention. But what you need to know about these two is wire communications and oral communications are protected at the very highest level. As government, we cannot intercept those without something that is much harder to get than a search warrant. We call it a search warrant on steroids. You have to have everything you need for a search warrant plus a lot of other stuff. Now, the reason this should interest you is, first of all, you use communications every day and you want to be protected. Your privacy you want protected. The second thing you need to know is when you're doing some of the things that people take naturally, like filming each other with video cameras, you may unwittingly step into wiretap territory. The statute says that you shall not use a device, which may be a video camera with the sound on, to intercept communications without the consent of a party. Now, that's the federal. Some states require all parties. And unless you have the consent of a party, or are they in a place where there's no reasonable expectation of privacy? There's that phrase again that you heard in the first talk. Reasonable expectation of privacy would not be out there where anybody can overhear you. It would be on a telephone. It would be on internet phone. Internet phone, even though it's going out electronically, which is the third kind of communication, is protected at that high level because a human voice is talking. Now, the last thing I want to tell you, because we really don't have time to do the whole statute and we want to give everybody time for questions, is that if you violate someone else's wire or oral communication privacy, and it's been 10 years that we started routinely writing wiretap tools into search warrants and hacker cases because we find those routinely. Not only can you be prosecuted for the wiretap violation and sued, and your thoughtful Congress has given statutory damages against even a civilian wiretapper, just as against the government, but you cannot use that evidence. And the classic case where this comes up is the annoyed boyfriend, girlfriend, spouse decides to wiretap the family phone or some other phone to find out what their beloved object is up to. They cannot use that in court, even if there's no state action. If a thief steals a document, he can deliver it to the police and say, you know I'm going to get in trouble for this, but I was doing a burglary last night, and I saw this plot to kill someone, and my conscience will not allow me to let this go, so I'm giving it to you. Well, we can use that and investigate. There's no state action. The police have done nothing wrong in most states. Under the federal wiretap statute, it's no good to you to wiretap someone else, because if you get caught, not only can you get prosecuted and sued, but you can't use it. No court will admit it except to prosecute you for violating that statute. That's how high the privacy level is. And, yes? Employers have certain exceptions within the wiretap statute. The wiretap statute is one of these things that says thou shalt not, but then you look at the exceptions. And employers and employees is a different situation because there are exceptions that cover regular business use of certain communications facilities. The phone company has the right to listen too because there's another exception that covers them for protecting the network from fraud and abuse, protecting users. So the telephone company has a limited right to listen in. They don't have a right to listen in to see if you're committing a crime just randomly, but if they're investigating something, they may have that right. Now, the final thing I want to say about electronic communications, because this is widely misunderstood. Electronic communications, let's just use email as the most common one. Employers, right now, the way the case law is working, employers can read your email and use it even if they promised you they wouldn't. There's a case out of Pennsylvania, the Pillsbury case, where they told the employee, we don't read email, it's confidential, we'll never use it against you. They did, they fired the guy, and the court upheld it. So do not say anything on your boss's email systems that you don't want to read in the paper or have used against you. Okay, now, I don't want to go into detail there. If any of you have questions, I cannot give legal advice as a member of a government any more than Kevin can to individual people, and I need to repeat the same disclaimer that these are, anything I say here is not the opinion of my boss or my office, may not even be my opinion if we get into an argument, but we'll try to answer questions. Now, for Kevin, if you have any questions about Nevada law or anything else, is available, and so am I. And since we have a virtual schedule here, obviously, I think we'll hold the questions down to about 10 minutes so we don't trample too much on the next speaker. Okay? You want to be master of ceremonies?
Oh, okay. I'll be master of ceremonies. Hey, is the guy that knows the difference between bad meth and good meth, does he have a question? No, he doesn't have a question. Right here in the front.
Okay.
If the FBI does it, it's obviously a foreign counterintelligence emergency.
Yes.
Okay, somebody breaks into the system, installs a sniffer designed to steal passwords. Is that a violation of the privacy of the people who affect those passwords, and would you prosecute on that?
That's a direct violation of Nevada law. Whoops, to break into anybody's system for any reason. To break in, to alter, to view, to steal data of any sort is a felony in Nevada, so we would prosecute.